Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the High Tea Hoops podcast. This is Skylar, the Duchess of Hoops, as always, back with Brian, the Duke of Hoops.
High Tea
Brian,
Hoops.
How's it going?
It's going.
You completely missed it.
I'm like 5 seconds delayed. I don't think we've ever nailed that intro, but I am doing fantastic. We can talk about this later, but the BBL is on Sky Sports. Breaking news this morning on Friday. So amazing.
Very exciting day.
I'm hyped.
I'm hyped because we have a great episode today. We are here with Benson Mensah-Bonzu, a sports partnerships manager at Twitter. Benson, how's it going?
It's going great. How's everybody doing? Not everybody, like, it's the whole world.
Us, yeah. Two of us.
Hey, fans who can't respond.
Hello, world.
Thanks for listening. Give us a 5-star review. Thank you.
Thanks so much for being here today.
No problem.
We had to build an audience before we brought you on, Benson. You've been on our list for a while. I DM'd you pretty early on. I was just waiting for the right moment to get you on.
Shooting shots. So obviously some of our listeners will have an idea of who you are. They've seen you around on the UK basketball Twitter community. But for those who don't know, how about you just tell us a little bit about your background in marketing and sports?
Yeah, sure. So where do I start?
We'll get into the family stuff later. If you just want to start in professional world, you can start
professional
there.
Professional world. Okay, professional world. So professional starts circa 2008 at GW. Undergrad was somewhat undecided. I knew I wanted to do marketing, and I think sports management came in. The summer before, after my freshman year, it was almost like completely challenging to find an internship as an international student. So all of my friends were working at big advertising marketing firms as well as consulting firms with great internships. And ultimately, the only option I had was to pretty much do it by myself. So I ended up starting a business with a colleague who was a top tier developer, to which during that time, we did some awesome stuff. So we ended up building brands, marketing campaigns for Keon Doolin, Nolan Smith. And we built a publication for Keon Doolin called Sportsality, which was focused on just showing what athletes were doing from a philanthropic standpoint. And yeah, my focus was pretty much to kind of, with the business, it was mainly a digital agency helping small businesses transition from traditional media to more efficient, cost-effective PPC social campaigns, as well as building like effective websites, e-commerce stores, and so forth. So
that was 2008.
That was 2008.
Yeah, that's so, when people didn't have websites yet.
Exactly.
It was so long ago.
So I mean, yeah, we were building the infrastructure and like almost establishing it quite early on. And I mean, during that time, it was, the sales process was quite interesting in just trying to convince people who were so used to just sending direct mails that like, actually, look, I guarantee you that if someone clicks on your link, they're going to buy from you. Like, you want to consider this, as well as just being a little bit more disruptive with the branding and like design. Like if I look at Pat the Rock, I'm not sure if you remember him from And One. But Pat the Rock is still using the same brand identity that we did for him.
That's amazing.
Lasting even power.
The nostalgia going.
Exactly. So yeah, I did that. About in 2012, ended up severing the business. The revenue that we needed in order for me to kind of stay in America prolonged wasn't there. But I was able to get a great opportunity back in England where I wanted to go client side. So I moved over to automotive, where I worked for Fiat Chrysler, which is Fiat, Jeep, Alfa Romeo, a couple other brands. And I was the digital lead. So I was responsible for taking the above the line creative and just adapting it on digital. So, I mean, I did some awesome stuff with the likes of Microsoft, Xbox, you name it. I had budget to spend to bring things
That's
to
amazing.
Life and just
love that automotive budget.
Exactly. Yeah.
Skylar's from Detroit. I lived in Detroit. You love the automotive budget.
I just missed out on going to Motown to go and see the Chrysler office. But yeah, I was there for 5 years, just really just helping them build the digital infrastructure to kind of help build a much more efficient like sales process. Like we're doing so much with magazines at the time, and everything was changing. I mean, it went to the point where before no one was really advertising on Facebook, to Facebook and Twitter being like the core places you advertise, because that's where people were spending their time. So then I transitioned to a tech company, small business, but just killing it, working with all of the big B2B tech companies from a lead generation standpoint. But during all of that time, I was still on the back end consulting with athletes and sports entities, Premier League players, which helped me secure the gig at Twitter. It was just a thing where I kind of understood what needed to be done. And they were like, yeah, come in and do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we dive into the Twitter stuff, because I do want to figure out and learn more about the role there, you grew up in a basketball family, which Haiti Hoops are trying to build the culture of basketball in the UK. It's always been, you know, how do we get the more interest in the NBA and the BBL and the WBBL? You know, Benny's your sister, director of daily content for the Olympic Channel, Pops, obviously, NBA player, this incredible family in sports. What was it like growing up in London, where you actually were in the basketball culture in the UK?
So I think one thing that I got to mention is like, anyone that really played basketball as a child probably started in secondary school, because it wasn't in any primary or elementary school.
A lot of people start late.
Exactly. So I think the first person I want to give a shout out to is my oldest brother, Kojo. He basically crawled so everyone could run, jump, and like to make it to the NBA. So Kojo, I remember the first opportunity I got the basketball experience, Kojo had moved to America. At the time, he just graduated from Washington State University. And you guys have probably heard of this event. You've probably heard of this event, which is called Rough and Ready.
Yes. I wish they still had it. That sounds incredible.
To this day, Rough and
Ready. In Brighton, right? On the beach?
No, in Brixton.
In Brixton.
Yes.
Got it.
It was
the big tournament.
The Brixton Rec, the amount of people they brought in, and it was really prolific. Shout out to Matt Ryder. My oldest brother, this is the first time I got to see him play. Like, he'd been living in America for about 5 years, came back, and I remember looking at the sheet, and everybody, they basically had bars to just justify everybody's game. And my brother was the only one that had full bars across the board.
Like the NBA Jam bars? Like, exactly, is that what they had? That's amazing.
Yes.
That is a flex.
Yeah.
And I just remember walking through and watching him, and basically just carrying his bag, but just watching like the whole room just kind of like gravitate towards it. And
how much older than you is he?
Kojo is about, oh my God, now I have to do the
Benton, this is taking too long.
He was told there would be no maths.
He's in his 40s. Sorry. Okay.
So quite a big age difference. So he got you guys in early. Yeah.
Yeah. So at the time I was 11 years old. And I just remember that was like my first experience with basketball. And to this day, I remember watching Matt Bryant, Amming, and Justin Robinson, just casually dribbling the ball around Brixton Rec. And we were all the same age. Yeah. So at that point, I was just like, yo, I need to get in this. So my brother next week took me to a Brixton Rec training camp, and I training with Coach Rogers, and it was just like, yo, I need to figure out how to get
that's amazing
this.
To hear. Yeah.
So pretty
so you
much.
Were in it. You were in it early in the glory days that we're trying to get back, from what it sounds like. I listen to a lot of Hoops Fix podcasts. Shout out Sam Nita. Yeah. Nita, full-time British basketball advocate. Love him. So I've listened to the Rough and Ready pod.
Saying the full title.
Yeah, in my terrible British accent.
So, I mean, I just waited for Joe White to come and call me. At that point, Joe, like, he literally did send for me. That's the most funniest thing. At the time, he had moved to Haringey, so the whole White Heat movement and infrastructure was built on, like, a Hackney-Haringey hybrid. Yeah. And to this day, it's by far one of the best experiences that I almost try and encourage as many teams to consider as a way of really understanding what it means to have a family outside of your own, but have something to kind of keep you focused. Because, I mean, we were doing school, we were training twice a week after, but it was the idea that we were traveling together, like, out the ends, out the borough, and experiencing things together. And, like, growing up, And still to this day, like some of the guys we grew up with are like still some of my closest friends. So
then
I got the opportunity to go stateside, went to Maine, balled out there. And it was also great to kind of see other British ballers kind of transition to the States, because we knew that like in order for us to transition or get to the next level, America in any capacity was the holy grail. Mm-hmm. And I think the one thing we realized is actually we're starting again, and we're starting so far behind, because these kids have been playing basketball from the age of 3, 4, 5, and they've had it in their hands. So unfortunately, I hate to use this term, but our athleticism kind of pushed us ahead, and we were still trying to learn the game, but the American way, because now you're competing at a different level. Like these kids are like playing easily 20, 30 hours a week casually. Whereas before in England, it was just like 4 to 8 hours.
That's serious, especially with AAU rising.
My gosh. AAU.
It's crazy, man. AAU tournaments are wild.
If I've got time, I have to talk about AAU, man, because AAU was like the best summer experience ever. Like,
you took an AAU summer tour?
I was on the main team. I can't remember what the main team was called, but it was like the main all-star team, and we had two teams. And I remember one weekend we go down to New York and we're like, oh, we're going to really come up against some ballers.
Damn.
And we had somewhat imposter syndrome, and we go down there and we blast them all out. And we talk
the main team?
Yes.
Go Maine. Lobsters and basketball. That's what they do.
We blast them all out to the point where they're talking crap and you can hear them talking crap.
Love
but
it.
Hey, we're getting buckets. So we make it to Orlando. Get there, we're like, yo, we need to do something. When we get there, we realize like basketball's on a different level. Marcus Jordan, we played against Marcus Jordan, so Michael Jordan was watching us play against his son, and we got blown out by 20 points. And yeah, Jordan was definitely wearing the boot cuts, so
love it.
How many sizes too big were they?
Oh my god, you can fit like another 2-3 legs in there,
so. That's incredible. You got an in-person sighting of the boot cuts.
Oh yes.
That is
he was
incredible.
Just sitting courtside. It was just like.
Oh, also, just I can't imagine being able to say like Michael Jordan, watch me get my ass kicked. Like, what a weird story to have as a child.
Seriously,
I've never struggled in the zone. Like they destroyed us, but most of these kids had like D1 full ride scholarships. So just to have that experience was like phenomenal, and to be in a room filled with like teenagers that all had the same goal of like achieving a goal, whether it was just going to college, getting a scholarship, or making it to the NBA.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you got the London basketball experience in the 90s or 2000s. Quick question for you. Does Tottenham have the best basketball team in the Premier League? Gareth Bale out there hitting corner threes. Harry Kane's son. Right? Yeah, there's so many. Son can play. The floater.
Son can ball.
He came like, was it this?
Yeah, it was the two hands. I love it. They play after practice, it looks like. Jose loves it.
They've got it there just posted up.
Yeah, the hoops on the field. On the pitch.
I mean, one thing I've kind of noticed in a lot of the top sports teams, and you've probably even seen the Lakers do it, they almost kind of foster like a casual alternative sports experience where they have it for fun, but it's a way of just kind of like either warming up or just keeping that team spirit about.
Yeah. It's really cool.
You'll see teams like kick around a football before games. It's cool to see. It's fun.
Yeah.
Okay, Brian got his Tottenham question.
Thank you, Skylar.
He's been dying to ask you that. You're a Tottenham fan. We're Tottenham fans, but
born and raised Tottenham.
Yeah, I love it. Get the
Arsenal
people
as
off my timeline.
We got to choose Tottenham as our team, but he had to get that question.
I think Selena Conroy from the BBL is a big Arsenal, so we battle on Twitter a lot, but that's all right. You can ask your questions now, Skylar.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks, Brian.
I have to be impartial, so. While I am pro Tottenham, because of everybody that I work with, I have
sports are great.
Luckily, on this podcast,
all sports are great.
You do not need to be impartial. You can be wild in on this.
The Benson from Twitter's official statement: all sports and all clubs are great.
Yes.
I just hope both teams have fun. Okay, let's get into your role at Twitter a little bit. Can you just tell us what it's been like managing athlete partnerships at Twitter?
Yeah, so it's been very interesting, and it's almost been like a culture shock because I failed to kind of realize that, like, with Twitter, everything that happens in the real world impacts what I do. So, in any capacity. So, like, just looking at Rashford and just the conversation that just accelerates around him, and then even going back to the point of when the players in the NBA decided to boycott because of the ruling of Breonna Taylor. But just in general, anything that happens in the real world kind of impacts what I do and is almost a source of inspiration. So when it does happen, that's where my ideas start to kind of brew up, and I get the opportunity to just kind of like say, hey, I saw what happened. I think in order to kind of keep the conversation going and for you to be able to share your voice effectively, let's look at doing this. Let's look at doing this. So, but it just kind of give you an insight on what I do. There's almost like three pillars. The first is just like health and safety. So protect the athlete's use of the platform every day.
Seriously. So many trolls you have to fight against.
Yeah. But some of it is, you'll be surprised at how many athletes can't remember their password or what email address they used.
That does not surprise me at all.
They're just like moms. They just like constantly need help like getting in.
Next is basically just keeping them up to date with new tools, new functionality, and getting them to like beta test it before everybody else does. And last is, just helping them tell their story with like original content and really understanding how they communicate and being able to amplify it more effectively based on what I've seen them do. So,
I was able to go to the Twitter Sports Summit in San Francisco a couple of years ago with all of the, basically every major sports league team was there represented, and they were telling some incredible stories of how Twitter is helping, you know, NBA, Twitter, all of these different leagues really be that second screen experience. So are there any public projects related to athlete partnerships that you can highlight, or just give the, you know, our listeners a sense of what does, you know, helping an athlete build their brand, increase their influence on Twitter really look like?
So public, there are a couple that are coming up, but I just can't ruin it.
That's right. We'll follow up.
We'll have you back on.
I don't want to jinx it. But yeah, a lot of where my focus is being able to kind of like looking at how we can aid like the Marcus Rashfords and a couple athletes that are being more socially driven. So like Lewis Hamilton, Hector Bellerin, and others that are just willing to kind of tell their story. Whereas we've got others that it's just almost encouraging their day-to-day use to be a little better. So like, you find it funny, but I kind of told Aubameyang, like, he speaks five languages, but he was just notorious. He was notorious for retweeting. So I was just like, look, with all the languages you speak, can you consider like just typing something in with a retweet? It doesn't have to be any words. You can just use emojis. And if you go to Aubameyang's feed right now, every retweet has an emoji.
So you're actually working with the individual athletes to almost be their consultant on how to get better at Twitter.
Yeah. So the athletes, their agencies, and almost encouraging them, like whenever they've got an idea or they're working on the campaign or there's something they want to drive, come to me and let me figure out how we make this work. And it's also had an influence over their narrative and how it gets distributed. Because well, usually when we do, we notice that the big media houses want to jump in and want to tap into that conversation. So, at the end of the day, everything is about accelerating the conversation and ensuring that there is a conversation that happens on the back end of it.
That being said, what do you think makes a strong social media presence for an athlete, and who are some athletes that you think are examples of people who are doing it really well and people that other athletes could learn from?
Well, it sounds like it's definitely emojis on retweets, right? That's the gold ticket. That's what we got to do.
Oh, sorry. Can you read the first part of the question so I can get that right before jumping onto that?
What makes a strong social media presence for an athlete?
So strong media, it's all about authenticity. Being you and being you always. Sometimes you just see athletes wanting to comment on things, and in those instances, they're quite reliant on like someone being able to write the copy and just chime in. And I mean, after a while, I think you realize that the public are just like, oh, this is the same thing over and over again. Posting before a game, posting after a game, posting a training picture, and it's almost redundant. And there's nothing genuine to it until you kind of see them take you into the house, or they jump in on a conversation about the NBA. So a Premier League player talking about like Kobe, and that's where you start to kind of see a level of authenticity that just goes beyond what they're doing on the court. Yeah, I mean, just to, I think it would be, I would have to kind of highlight Mesut Ozil from Manchester, from Arsenal.
I mean, now you're just covering up for yourself right now with all these Arsenal references.
I know, bro. This is the worst bit. Like,
you're compensating. You're overcompensating.
But yeah, I mean, he's been using his platform for like just social good. He's got over 25 million followers, which is definitely the most in the UK of an athlete. Marcus Rashford, and there's no words I can put behind Marcus Rashford as someone who grew up like him to see him just kind of push that agenda. And just literally like make no excuses for it, make it seem like it's one of his core focuses. It's to the point where there is a difference. Like, you've got Marcus Rashford, the difference between Marcus Rashford, the athlete, and then Marcus Rashford, the social good advocate. Who else?
The Kaepernick, LeBron, Rashford, like them stepping up with those presents. So it's not just authentic, but they have, you see different parts of them as a human and not just the training picture. As much as I love Magic Johnson's Twitter, it's not just these two teams are playing tonight.
He found his lane. He did. That's
on brand now. It's totally on brand now.
I think he has a great Twitter presence.
But it is great to see these athletes stepping up to not just training photos and game reactions, but who they are as people. And it's not just about dribbling a ball, or it's not just about what they do on the pitch.
Yeah, it's actually interesting, like, for as much as LeBron does, like, LeBron is single-handedly trying to save our democracy, you know, he's the best basketball player in the world. WNBA. Like, he does so many things. It's not his job, but he said, well, I think I can do it, so I'm going to step up, and I appreciate that. But it's wild, like, you can tell he does his social media. Like, people shit on, like, the Taco Tuesday thing, but I personally love seeing inside his house, love seeing his family, love seeing them just, like, clowning around, and first of all, seeing how rich they are, and seeing
or
his daughter's got her own house.
Can I do it? So thankful.
Zuri has her own house, and I want a tour of it.
Yeah, that's amazing to see.
What are some common missteps you see with athletes on social?
Other than, so retweets, it seems like, if you're just not really engaging and you're just retweeting constantly.
Yeah, if you're just not doing anything.
I wouldn't call it a misstep. I would just think that your feed is supposed to be a representation of yourself. And if all you're doing is retweeting, there isn't that much authenticity. Like, a retweet is a way of you just kind of showing like something you kind of stand for. When you add your commentary to it, it becomes your own, which is why we kind of did that experiment. I'm not sure if you remember, where anytime you went to go and retweet something, it just automatically came up with the quote.
Oh, I think people on Twitter noticed.
I think very smart people suddenly didn't know how to retweet.
Yeah, exactly.
But what we were doing there was we were almost trying to advocate for commentary. With the elections that just passed, we wanted people to kind of understand the information that they were sharing, but also put their own spin on it. So anybody that was reading it, would understand like what their views were on top of that article.
So that's great advice for the athletes.
Yeah.
And it's definitely. Twitter is so hard because Instagram, even TikTok, these other platforms, I think it's a lot easier to share a photo of you conditioning or video of you working out or just doing a story of you walking around London. But it's Twitter's hard. Like it, you have to put thoughts down. You are, it's a real intellectual investment a lot of time.
Well, I mean, I think I have to say like video and images work much better on Twitter.
Agreed.
But there's a level of, you've got the perception side of things. You can always stage that. But when it comes to creating your voice, Twitter is that lane that you need to be in. And one thing I kind of tell people is you always kind of want to let people kind of know who you are early on in your career, because if you retire and you probably not use the time to be authentic and show who you are, it's going to be hard for them to kind of gauge that, like, actually, this is the authentic me, or be able to stand by you because you didn't take the time to show instances of that. And Twitter is one of the best places for that. Whether it's you standing up for BLM, you showing your frustration on
VAR,
your football team, or VAR. Exactly. I mean, Gary Lineker, like, if you watch, like, Gary Lineker is a beast at it. And I mean, even his humor. Humor goes a long way. And when people can see that athletes are humorous, it opens so much door for them to get considered for Dancing with the Stars. And
absolutely. And so this is an investment that the athletes have to choose and to invest in this area. And you, they have to, they're taking your advice and they are, you're basically consulting with them. What are some of the reasons they actually do that? What are their goals to, you know, why are they listening to Benson say, hey, you need to comment, why you need to add commentary. You can't just retweet. What's kind of in it for the athletes to actually grow that presence on Twitter?
I think it's being able to not just grow their following, but to go a step further and just really establish a basis for clout and influence. For some of them, it's about like some endorsements are based on like Twitter following and
Other
social media following. And there are others that are like tapped into like what you're actually saying to the point where they're willing to look at you and say, actually, Ovi, let's give you a book deal.
Yes, Ovi.
Seriously.
So, you could kind of see the benefit and the output based on how you kind of put yourself out there. And granted, I do feel that athletes should definitely keep things private. But if they do want to open up to the world and they want the world to see the authentic them, Twitter is one of the best places to kind of build that narrative.
And you mentioned Ovi. I'm an Ovi stan.
You opened a can of worms here, Benson.
It used to be in my bio that I was an Ovi stan.
Listen,
I'm actually not even going to ask you about Ovi. I'm just joking.
But listen, Skylar, I cannot believe they have a show every day, Benson. What is with UK reality TV? Every day? You know how many summers I've spent now watching Love Island every night with the Queen of Hoops and the Duchess of Hoops?
They're just giving the people what they want.
Right? Seriously. That's what I always say. They wouldn't have it every night if people weren't watching it every night.
We went to London. They're like, let's find a pub to watch Love Island on tonight. I'm like, oh my God.
It's funny because I didn't watch it until like Ovi got on, because I was just like, oh, there's a, he's joined me.
BBL player.
Honestly, good time to pick it up. That was a good season.
Yeah. And I think I started talking about it more like with people who were initially like fans of it, and they're just like, oh, so now you're engaged.
I joke. I love Love Island.
You can't resist it.
I've been sucked in fully now. I've converted over.
Yeah, we've made him. But what advice would you give to the British basketball players as they're building their brands on social media? Are there places where they should focus that maybe are different than NBA players or Premier League players, just because it's a smaller market?
I think they can only do so much with So just to kind of give you like a landscape, if you look at the media that is put out there for a Premier League or NBA player, they're on TV 2-3 hours for a game.
Yeah.
And then they've also got all of the top broadcasters creating content highlight clips for them. Now, that doesn't exist in its capacity at the top level in the BBL, which means that ultimately the athletes need to take a little bit more control of their brand and like step it up. So
that's a great point.
There are instances where I've seen like the alternative talents pop out from some of these Premier League, for some of these BBL athletes. So Kofi Josephs, he does like
these. He's an incredible artist. Yeah.
Dope artist. Since we're talking about him, I mean, he's modeling as well. So I mean,
it helps when you're that attractive. It's so annoying.
Exactly. He's got the ASOS swag.
So. You're an athlete, professional athlete, and artist and model. Come on, give me a break. Leave some room.
Exactly. But I think it's the key thing is just finding out what's true to you and being able to start a conversation, not by yourself, but with a group of people. So Joe from the London Lions is perfect for him. The cyber nerds. He's tapping into a community that is growing exponentially, like esports, gaming. And then there is a culture of young teens that when they do become like actual consumers and actual spenders, he's going to be an influence. And he already is an influence in that space for them. Yep. And so that's one thing I kind of encourage a lot of these guys to kind of figure out and tap into. If you love music, try and work to be like a voice of music, because it will be the perfect companion to your game on the court. You need to diversify your game on and off the court. Justin Robinson, I've consulted with him quite a bit, and I know that he's going to be a force when it comes to leading the next generation of like inner city kids that really just need to figure out like how to make it. Whatever it is, he wants to be the guy to use basketball to help them just figure out who they are and not allow the streets to do that.
Yeah,
that's such a good point on, diversifying. And Zoe Skaman on our podcast last week talked a lot about that, where if you want to expand, especially in the UK in basketball, find the other cultural elements within the UK, like music, like art, like esports and video games and 2K. And she mentioned, Juju Smith-Schuster and Ninja, and they bring in all these different people to play a game of Fortnite, and Drake playing Fortnite together.
Exactly.
So you get those crossover audiences, and then you can leverage that into something else. Yeah. And it's such a good method to actually bring everything together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The one thing I say there is a lot of people think that just jumping on like that cross-functional or that that cross-promotional piece works instantly. It actually doesn't. So if I look at some of the top Premier League players that have like set up esports teams and whatnot, whenever they talk about their side hustles, it has the least engagement, only because they haven't been consistent with it.
Yeah.
And in order for them to be consistent with it, they need to continuous post and like start to create that narrative where, whether it's twice a week, they're engaging with other Premier League players or other UK athletes that will help them kind of grow their audience that both like football or both like the sport as well as esports too.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
We see a lot of athletes end up trying their hands at similar ventures outside of sports, though. We see a lot of sneaker deals. We see a lot of wine labels. We see a lot of, clothing lines. Brian said esports. Is there a way where athletes can ensure that their brand is unique and distinguishable, even though they may be trying their hand at ventures that are really similar to a lot of other athletes?
Yeah. It's interesting you say that, because I think over the last 3-4 years, I've seen like more distinct like side hustles from, I mean, if you look at like most of the players that were in the Golden State Warriors, so like Kevin Durant, Andre Iguodala, like they used San Francisco and its tech to kind of just get into that, like,
yeah, their investment funds, launching full VC firms.
Yeah.
And I know from like hearing stories from like my brother talk about like Chris Bosh, like it's to the point where there were people out there that had money. And because these guys have got so much influence, they're like, they will throw money at Chris Bosh and say, look, whatever business venture you got, we'll cover it. Like, mm-hmm. just launch it. Let's test it out. Nobody knows that Chris Bosh launched a clothing line with an actual dope fashion designer called Rory Boswell. It went to like the Las Vegas show and it did well, but it just never hit like the local market. And it's one of those things that I think now, especially with like BBL players, it's really important for you to surround yourself with, I wouldn't say just like-minded people, but people that can elevate your game mentally, financially. I mean, I know a lot of people that now work in finance that used to play basketball, and they really should be looking at like, yo, is there anything I can invest in? You recommend in this? To really just consider doing more outside of just relying on that one channel of income.
Yeah, absolutely. And if there's one thing I've learned on Twitter, the magic happens in the DMs. So if you're a young athlete, if you are trying to find those sponsors and you're trying to associate with people like that, just send them a DM. Yeah. Say you appreciate their work. It's so powerful to establish that connection. I mean, that's how we met through just Twitter DMs. Established that connection before.
I think another thing to kind of add is a large number of players in the BBL are, and in British basketball, are of African descent. And Africa is now like that gold mine. There's a huge opportunity for them to take their brand and go over. Like track and field star Mike Edwards, who married to Perry Shake Straighten, another track athlete. He went to Big Brother and in Nigeria. He was Obi before Obi. So.
The OG Obi.
Yeah,
he was Obi before Obi, but yeah, he... they went over there to the point like he was just so big, like I need to capitalize on this, and they stayed there for a while. So,
I opened the show with this breaking news Friday morning. You may be listening to this at another time, but Sky Sports 2-year deal with the BBL to have them on TV. You mentioned that in the BBL, a lot of the players have to take on a lot of the creation themselves. Rather than the NBA, there's all the, you know, so many people are creating highlights from them and everything. So now that there is a TV deal. Instant reactions. We haven't had a lot of time to process this, but what does this mean to British basketball to actually get a Sky Sports TV deal?
I think it's huge because Sky are on top of the game. Like if you look at like how Sky, just from a Twitter standpoint, manage their feed, it's all about being the first to kind of report stuff. So when Harry Kane or Son score a goal, like they're chopping that up so that the people can react to it, retweet it, engage with it. In real time of it happening, because in some instances, some people aren't paying for these pay-per-view or don't have these Sky Sports still. So they're literally just watching the ticker. They're literally just watching the ticker to kind of see like what the score is. And then when these clips come in, it's driving the conversation. And just going back to my point now, there's so much media out there on Twitter that it's helping other people kind of like discover it. So I can't, like, when it comes to those clips, Sam is one of the only people I see that are sharing clips. So that's how I'm staying on top of, like, grassroots basketball and players that are coming up in the game. The BBL should really be at the forefront of that, live cutting some of these. Because I've been to, like, I was sitting front row center at a London Lions game, and I miss it. I'm so vexed.
Seriously.
But I mean, now that I'm in this role, I'm just like being able to kind of cut up like 10 clips from this game will not just do stuff for the athletes, but do so much more for the game for people to kind of consume and be like, oh, I didn't know that was there. I didn't know that was, that was even there. Like the live stream isn't enough. Like people need to understand the best bits of the game to at least bring them in.
We're seeing like people my age, like young millennials or Gen Zers, like don't even watch basketball on TV. They just go for the highlights on social anyway. So like if that's not even an option, makes it really tough.
Does that mean we get a BBL Twitter now? I tweeted you this.
You did, and I gave you eyes.
Is that still your answer? Yes. Just eyes?
it's just eyes. I mean, I hope that over the years it will, the conversation on Twitter will grow as a result of the Sky Sports standpoint. But
should I hashtag BBL Twitter every tweet when we're doing live coverage? Does that actually help, or does it not help?
You
and Brian will start it by himself.
You and 100,000 other people, if possible. So
I mean, it starts with one. That's all I can do.
You always gotta have one. Okay, let's wrap up. We're gonna wrap up with just like some shithead questions.
Some fun Twitter questions that you get all the time.
Very serious, very educational questions. And I let Brian get one Tottenham question in, and now I've got to get my shithead questions in. So as a professional, where do you land on Twitter beefs? Are they good for teams? Are they good for leagues? Are they good for players? I personally love them. So I think they're good for all of them.
Are you for team rivalries?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, then Twitter beefs to team rivalries are, oh, God, I love metaphors, but I don't have an analogy for them. But yeah, it's basically the digital version of that rivalry, and it's taken to the people, and it's just allowing the people to kind of to manage that rivalry themselves. Because the beefs, I mean, it starts with one or two players, and before you know it, you've got a war between two sides. Because I mean, the barbershop, the age-old barbershop discussion, which, I mean, I haven't been to the barbershop in a while to kind of to have it, but who's better, Kobe, Jordan, LeBron?
Yeah.
And it still goes on Twitter, like, even after, and every time, like, LeBron, like, just winning this championship, people are like, oh, so, like, where does he rank now? And people are all making these cases, but that beef is just...
It's the lifeblood of Twitter. I mean, just like Kevin Ware going, you know, Nick Lewis is nice, but the Sharks are trash. That set off an explosion of BBL Twitter that would never have happened, regardless of what you think of the comments. It set off a conversation. Calling Tom Bonnet goofy as hell was hilarious. And then Tom Bonnet made t-shirts with the tweet on it. And man, so funny. It's so effective.
I mean, I've seen some subliminal tweets from players after certain teams lost, and I'm not going to jump into it because I don't want no smoke myself. So.
Oh, Brian's just throwing out names.
Oh yeah,
Brian does they not love care.
It. I'm supportive of everything.
Yeah, as I told you, I have to be impartial.
Yeah,
I think you've done a great job on this pod.
Yeah, you've towed the line very well. I'm proud of you. It's been good.
Yeah. Okay, last question. We did get this question from a user on Twitter. I will not reveal who it was. You can go look after. How often do you get asked if you can verify someone? Every day?
I'm just trying to see the frequency on a daily basis. First of all, I'm not even verified, so.
Yeah, you're like, hey, I got to focus on myself.
Like, if you had that power, you're like, I'm getting myself verified.
Exactly. Right now, just kind of give you insight, because of the pandemic, it's paused because the business has just had to refocus, and the elections just opened up a new can of worms. But as a business, we're really focused on just trying to make sure that the information that's being put out there that isn't an opinion, isn't misinformation that's kind of misguiding people. Because before we knew it, it was too late. Like, someone had changed the course of the election by sharing. And I've even had to put my mom in the spot because she sends me things on WhatsApp that are just like...
Same.
I think all of us.
I think everyone gets links from their parents where you're like, this is not real.
To the point where I've had to educate her on what spam is, like... Just because you receive the email from Amazon, it doesn't look at the email address. This is a Gmail address. Amazon will never send you an email from Gmail.
Well, I mean, through the elections. Nice. Go ahead, Skylar.
It's nice that Twitter's actually trying, because I mean, we've seen other socials not even really attempt it.
Yeah.
So
I think Twitter's
I've been really impressed
job.
With. I've been so impressed with the job Twitter's done.
We're not perfect, but we know we're making like necessary strides to be able to not just protect the conversation, but like because it is now a specific comms channel. Like
yeah.
before it was just TV official. And radio, but mm-hmm. it's official. Like it's even more so now, like news correspondents are reliant on Twitter to be able to find and share mm-hmm. information out as soon as possible. Like I'm not sure if you remember the whole Beirut explosion.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh wow.
I remember seeing that one video, but then being able to watch every news reporter kind of source that one video to then be able to start their news feed on that. Like, we don't yeah. know what's happened, but there's been an explosion in Beirut. 3 more minutes, they've got new information and they're adding to it.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's, I think Skylar and I, Twitter's our number one in our hearts.
Yeah. It's my favorite Twitter product.
So much. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, Benson, thank you so much for coming on today. This has been so much fun. I hope lots of basketball players can listen and learn a little bit from you.
Yes.
Do you have anything to plug? Where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter, Creative Bonsu. I mean, I don't know what else to say.
Are you that's good. Once the rec centers, once the leisure centers open up, are you playing pickup anywhere? Getting on the court.
This is the thing. Like, so one of my biggest beefs has been that, like, to go and play basketball at like random rec center has been £10, like for a 1 hour session. I'm like, are you stupid, bro?
I think tough. Brian would pay a lot more than
obscene
that
amounts. I haven't played basketball in 7 months because of the lockdown. Yeah. So we'll have to play when we get over there. And the pandemic is when the sweet, sweet vaccine comes through.
Yeah, I mean, I randomly get invited to like random runs, some with like some of my boys. And the ones I go to that aren't one of my boys are usually the ones where I'm not invited again because some people just can't take like getting smoked.
That smoke that New York saw with the main AAU team.
Exactly.
Don't mess with that main AAU team.
This man has been hardened by having Michael Jordan watch him lose.
Winters in Maine. Yeah. Well, thanks, Benson, so much for coming on. We appreciate it.
No problem. If it makes a difference, after that loss, we went to Hooters. So I think that's kind of...
Huge difference. Let's leave it on that. That's incredible. Love it. Thanks, Benson.
Oh, cool. Appreciate that.